Welcome to the Casual Comics Cast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Casual Comics Cast Christmas edition. It's Joe, your Casual Comics guy, here with my buddy Mark. How you doing, Mark?
I'm doing great, Joe. Merry Christmas.
Are you ready to jingle all the way through another episode?
I am ready. Let's slay this episode.
Nice. We'll see how many more Christmas puns we can sneak in to our conversation. Today we're talking Marvel Christmas festivities. I had a DC conversation with Jeff. I think this one might be a little more fun, not due to my co-host. Jeff is a wonderful co-host, but DC Christmas comics are pretty dang depressing.
Are they really? Oh no, that's another reason why I don't read DC comics.
They are. They're a little bit. I don't know. I didn't read a lot of Golden Age comics because Marvel's more like Silver Age, that time frame. Golden Age is a little rough. It's tough to read.
DC Golden Age is tough to read.
Yeah, there's a lot there. My favorite was some character Jeff and I didn't even know. Sandman and his sidekick Sandy.
Sidekick is Sandy.
Yeah, it's like a little Batman and Robin situation, except I don't know how far it doesn't predate Batman, but he has similar things like Batman, and he has a wire harpoon that he shoots so he can go across things, and they keep calling it the wire poon. I'm like, stop with the wire poon. I don't want to hear about it anymore.
What the heck is that? Oh my gosh, there's so many ways we could take that. Wire poon.
So we'll keep it on the nice list for today's Casual Comics Cash with Marvel Comics. We're going to talk Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday Special. That has hit. We'll talk some Marvel Comics. I think we're talking about Amazing Spider-Man 166, Marvel Team-Up number 1, and Sensational She-Hulk number 8, all from slightly different eras of comics history, but all dealing with the Christmas holiday. So yes. How's your run-up to the holiday season been going, Mark?
Well, I had a lot of work travel leading up to it, so it kind of snuck up on me about 2 weeks ago, but it's been good. Yeah, it's been winding down. I think, family's coming into town and we're having a good time. We usually go someplace warm over Christmas, but this year we're not because we are going someplace warm next month. Mm-hmm. So it's a little odd because our tradition switched about 6 or 7 years ago to going someplace warm and not being at home. So it's kind of weird being home.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm bored all the time, but that's how you should be to relax anyway.
Well, it's perfect time to catch up on comics.
Yeah. How about you?
In the Marvel Unlimited app, no less.
That's right.
We can pick another couple events to talk about to get caught up on. I've been just trying to, with the work from home, it all bleeds into each other, but just trying to get into the, spirit now that I got a little more time, get caught up on my back issue stack over there and go through all my old comics. And I found a terrific app called CLZ. I don't know what CLZ stands for. It's a collectibles app. They make the app for coins, stamps. I got the comic book version that lets you database all of your comic books and it will real time sync up with comic values to show you the values of the comics. It's kind of cool.
My Comic Book Shop. I did it too, but it's just I used a different site.
Yeah. I was just trying to figure out a way to get them organized, and I ran into somebody at Oakview Mall when they had QuadCon there. There's a bunch of collectors, and the guy, he told me he had like something like 72,000 comic books. I'm like, you're crazy. He's like, yeah, that's how I keep them organized, because you can put what box they're in. So as I've been going through things, I'm not trying to organize them now, but I'm labeling what box they're in. So as I want to go put, I got some Spider-Man comics in this box, Spider-Man comics in this box, I can put them together when I'm done. So, and
that's cool.
For more recent comics, you can just scan the barcode and it just pops them right in.
Got it. Super helpful. No better way to get you into the holiday spirit by kicking it off with some somewhat uplifting Marvel comics and shows.
Right. So should we talk about the Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special, which we waited until last week to watch because even though it came out end of November?
Yeah, it was
beginning of December.
It was right. Yeah, and that's a theme that I'm not really into, which is all these holiday movies and shows and specials came out over Thanksgiving weekend. And I'm like, I'm not ready yet. Like, no. wait until closer to Christmas. I want to watch things like, you know, A Christmas Story, or, you know, not A Christmas Story, but I like watching the action movies over the Thanksgiving weekend. And Thanksgiving is about football.
Right.
You know, so I want to wait. But yeah, it came out, I think, right over Thanksgiving weekend. I didn't watch it until later, too. But it needs to be closer to Christmas, December.
Right.
Mid-December.
So this is the second Marvel special presentation, which I am enjoying. Werewolf by Night was awesome.
It was awesome.
Halloween time. And now the Guardians of the Galaxy Christmas. Is it Christmas special, holiday special? I forget how they bill it.
I think they call it Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday Special. I think is what the official title is. Yeah.
And yeah. They're in space trying to figure it out. It sounds like this is one of the first concepts James Gunn came up with when they were talking Disney Plus. He's like, no, we got to do a holiday special for the Guardians.
Yeah.
And quite.
And he's now running. Now he's running the DC cinematic universe.
Right. Now.
So I guess he was under contract to do this, or they already did it or something. But this was kind of his last thing other than the movie that's going to come out.
There was that whole back and forth with James Gunn that I didn't keep super close tabs on. If he's in Guardians, he's out, he's in. He had some social media posts people weren't fans of. If you're a fan of his social media posts, you probably aren't familiar with his movies that he made with Troma Studios, because they were offensive in every way, front, back, up, down. Doesn't matter who you were, you could find something that would offend you in those, because they're not good. But it should be no surprise that if you dig into James Gunn's past, there's some questionable comments he may have made on social media somewhere.
Yes, yes. But he's now running the DC Cinematic Universe, and he still had some movies to wrap up and shows to wrap up for Marvel, which was this special and Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3,
right,
which comes out, I think, in April, May, sometime next year.
I think
sometime
early next year. Because I think you got Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania. Spring.
It was April. Yeah.
Whoa. So let's dive into the Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special, right? It's Peter Space. It opens animated. My mom was like, this a cartoon? No, it's not.
And when they first started it, I was like, did I download the right, because I was watching it while I was traveling, like, did I download the right thing? Like, what's going on here? But it pulls you right in. You know, it's Yondu and it's Peter, Peter's trying to recreate what he remembers on Earth, or Terran,
right,
as Christmas, and Yondu would have none of it.
you gotta be hard to be a Ravager. Gotta That's get right. that sentimental nonsense out of your head.
Yes. You ain't giving no gifts. We don't give gifts. We're Ravages. That's it. That's the best I can do, Joe.
I love Michael Rooker as Yondu. Yondu's a character that all of Guardians of the Galaxy, if you can make a tree a character, you can make anything. But Yondu was unlikely to be a standout in the Marvel universe in my mind. And that's where Marvel's did like a great job between this and She-Hulk and some of the other stuff. Like, literally, it doesn't matter how silly or how crazy a character is, they might find a way to fit it into the MCU, which I like.
Yeah, and they really, that's what I like. They listen to the fans. I mean, he was a character in Guardians that I don't think they expected to write more content for. And then in Guardians 2, and then, of course, this holiday special, it's a big part of the family theme that they have. And I'm Mary Poppins, y'all. That's all I can say. But yeah, so it starts animated, and then they go into the live action stuff.
Which opens with, actually, do you know anything about that band? They're writing a Christmas song based on only the things they've heard Peter talk about, and their limited knowledge and understanding of what Christmas must be about, which is, I think, I've seen done before, but just not this well.
Yes, and that was the thing, like you said, Joe, right out of the gate, I got into the Christmas spirit, and it was, you know, the animated piece, and then they go into this song, and you have Peter like, no, that's not it at all. And he's got the little one-liners played great by Chris Pratt. But yeah, right out of the gate, it has the Guardians look and feel and a holiday festive Christmas spirit with that offbeat song, which was brilliant in my mind. It was really well done.
Oh, see, I'm looking it up now. I did not realize that I thought that's probably a band, but it is It is a band that was popular in the 90s called the Old 97s. And I remember the band from college radio, back in my college radio days. They've released 12 studio albums. So
wow, that's pretty good.
Quite if you're a fan of that song, go check out some of their other. It says their most recent release prior to this was 2020. So
no, oh, so that's there you pretty go. Recent. But yes, right out of the gate, yes, it was really, really good. And then you have it kind of cut into the meat of the story, which is Drax and Mantis feel bad for Peter, and they want to get him. They want to basically have him experience the, you know, Christmas spirit again. And they're like, "What do we do?"
Yeah, and it's funny because what I didn't expect is this to be picking up certain pieces of continuity. Like if you think about the last big release before, what was the last big movie before Wakanda Forever? It was
Thor, Love and Thunder. Yeah,
Thor was sort of its own thing. The Guardians leave, and they picks up Wakanda Forever. It's still part of the continuity, but Guardians picks up right away with threads that I forgot that go all the way back to Endgame, which is Gamora. Where is she? She's still missing.
She's out there. Somewhere. And the original Gamora's dead. This is 2014 Gamora that got from a different timeline.
Right.
So it's
no Peter.
Yeah. She doesn't know Peter at all. Right. Right. And they're on nowhere, which I had to go back to your point. I had to go back and figure out, like, why are they on nowhere? And they're basically helping kind of rebuild it, reorient it because of the decimation from the Thanos attack. Right. So they're on nowhere. That's where the setting begins.
But that's an odd place for them to, if they're doing is cleaning up the Thanos mess. Is because Thor Love and Thunder is like well after that, right? And
yeah.
And they leave, and then now they're on nowhere. Well, I'm not going
to
get.
I don't know where it sits in compared to Thor Love and Thunder. I think
it's got to be after because Gamora is gone. So it's got to be after Endgame.
Well, it's after Endgame, but is it before or after the Thor sequence, which I thought was out of place for that movie? But
when did Thor hook up with them? Right at the end of. Movie. Now I need to go back through all the continuity.
So, yeah.
When did Thor join up with the Guardians of the Galaxy?
So at the end of Endgame, they're looking at the map and they're wanting to decide where to go. And he's like, "But you say it's my ship, but you keep touching the map. It's my map. It's my ship." That I think that's at the end of Endgame, if I recall. I'm with you. I don't remember, but that's the last time I remember.
Thor: Love and Thunder starts with him working out and getting rid of the dad bod, right?
and then Guardians are there,
right?
But so, I don't remember even where they go or what they do. It's like I said, I didn't like that movie very much. I didn't like that part.
Took me back to the fact Gamora is missing. And Mantis is his sister, which I think I don't remember them bringing it up in Guardians 2, but then I was like, I think they did. I think they talked about him, her dad also being Ego.
Yeah, I think, and again, this is where you and I's research, we didn't do it because of our holidays sneaking up on us. But the way I understand it is it was implied to us when he was showing those cut scenes of all those wax figurines of him procreating with other alien species when he's telling his story to Peter, and you see him with a mantis-like creature. And so it left people wondering, oh, does that mean Mantis was a child of Ego? So I don't think they actually ever came out and said it, and you could maybe do your research and validate it, but it left fans wondering that. But you for sure get told it in the holiday special. Like that's the big spoiler alert. Maybe we should have started with that, but that's the big spoiler is Mantis is his sister, half sister. Their dad is both Ego.
All right. Well, I looked it up while we were talking. I'm going to clear up the confusion for us.
Yes.
For our listeners, clear it mostly up. For me. In Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, Mantis tells the Guardians that Ego found her on her homeworld and raised her as his adopted daughter. It seems she wasn't telling the whole truth, though, as Mantis finally reveals to Peter at the end of the holiday special, Ego is actually her biological father. So
that is when you find out in the special, for sure. Okay.
Right. So we were half right. They didn't really say it. They said it's his adopted daughter.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. Got it.
not a huge plot point, because the plot point all has to do with Peter being sad, mopey Peter, and then them choosing the best possible gift in the entire galaxy is not a what, it's a who.
So we don't need his favorite character.
I mean, it's not a thick plot. It's just somebody's sad. People who don't know about the holiday are going to have a lot of misunderstandings of what the holiday is actually about. They're going to cheer the person up and love and Christmas magic, and everybody will be happy. What were the like high points of the movie for you, or the show for you? Like, what were the things that stood out?
Yeah. So for me, it was, I didn't really watch much of the preview at all. So I was like, are they really going to have Kevin Bacon in this show? And how are they going to portray him? He was in the show. So my favorite moments were the series of moments where Kevin Bacon is just being Kevin Bacon. He's actually married to Kira Sedgwick, and he's like allegedly talking to her on the phone about, you know, I'll be home for the holidays kind of thing. And he's just sitting there and they come abduct him. And it's like how a real person would react, you know. It's like, all right, this is getting weird. Like, leave me alone. And they're like, no, you need to come with us. And they pick up, you know, candy canes and inflatable elves along the way. It's like they just act like Guardians characters. Like I wrote on here, it's like great character enrichment. Like they just were like, how would these characters act in these situations? And Kevin Bacon was no different. Like, how would he act?
Right. I think was great. It's kind of funny because when the Guardians movie is all about relationships and dynamics and people playing off each other. That's where comedy and drama comes from. And in like prior movies, we got to see a lot of Rocket and Groot, and even I think they did a Rocket and Groot TV series. And it's like, that's the natural. You see a lot of Rocket and Groot, and it was in Guardians too. Just some of the times where Mantis and Drax were together, I'm like, I want to see more Mantis and Drax. And for a large part of this holiday special, it's the Mantis and Drax show, just because they have both limited comprehension in their own way of like how the world works, and just two totally different worldviews. Like Drax's worldview, like right away when he tells the story of Peter getting into the tree and yada yada, he's like, not enough killing in it.
That's right.
But Mantis is just so happy all the time. But they're also both just selfish enough for it to be funny. Like you referenced the candy cane and the elf thing, and she still got her candy cane. He has no elf. She's like, well, you shouldn't have dropped it
then. That's right. That's what I'm saying. That whole, and you're right. That's probably what I loved about it, was that sequence between Kevin Bacon, Drax, and Mantis was wonderfully done. I found myself smiling a lot and laughing during that sequence.
Kevin Bacon's funny, he does really good in, because he's got to play this really fun part where it's like Mantis has used her powers to make him think that what's going on is completely awesome, but then it can't seem too awesome. And then they tell him he has to pretend to be whatever. And then just the amount of disgust they have when they find out he's an actor. They're like, ah, actor. Oh.
I know. It was so good. I love that whole spot. And they really leaned into it in an awesome way.
Right. Oh, and then immediately Peter's like, you did something. Right, Mantis? She's like, no, you did. Yeah.
You know? And then I would say, my second favorite was at the very end when they turn on all the lights and they bring in the fake snow, and you get a little kind of choked up, because it's like you said, it's about family and it's about being together and, you know, sharing and giving gifts. It's just then it goes back into the normal of, you gave me a person. You can't do that. So it's really great and sweet and heartwarming. And then it gets back into the Guardians motif, which is, she's like, you got to get snap Kevin Bacon out of your spell, trance, you know, whatever Mantis thing. And then he ends up doing the right thing.
Yeah, he's got a big heart at the end of it.
Yes, yes. After, you know, he's like, I'll be okay. And then he joins the 97 band and they have an end song, which
I forgot that Kevin Bacon has his own band.
He does, yeah.
This is the Bacon Brothers.
So yes. And so he sung at the end, which I also thought both music pieces were great, beginning and end.
I thought it was great. Yeah, it's a special that's got a lot of big heart, and it ends, and then a little more continuity in there, right? Yondu is not such a hard ass. He's got a sore spot for Peter. And now we know where Yondu got his alien squeeze doll.
That's right. I loved it. If again, if you're a fan of Guardians, this is a must watch. I got a little choked up, Joe, at the end when he sees the gift and he ends up having Christmas because Yondu saw that he really cared about him. Like, it wasn't about the event. It's about the caring and the family that you have. And so it was really great. I mean, I wrote down 10 out of 10. Like, I loved it. It
checks all the boxes. You laugh a little, you cry a little, and you learn something. What else? Right. What else do you want?
Yes. It checked all of them. I loved it. How about you?
Me too. Huge, huge thumbs up. Huge fan of it. It will become mandatory every year watching of the Guardian special because it's a one shot. It stands alone. If you know the characters, it's funny. It ends with a heartwarming Christmas message, which as I get older, I find I'm a little bit more sentimental. So
a little more perspective. Yeah.
I loved it. Loved it.
I did too. The only thing I wrote, and again, 10 out of 10, I said, no Gamora, boo. But she shouldn't be in there. They can't show too much. I mean, it's just a quick 40, 50 minute thing. So it was great.
And I feel like Nebula's just got such a, it's almost like it's too bad. But I mean, she is part robot, part whatever, and got just a hard edge. She's not your comic stylings that you kind of want from this, which is more of the Rocket Groot and the Mantis Nebula. Yeah. Peter,
yeah,
a little bit mopey, but I mean, that's what drives the action, drives the plot. So
it was good.
Awesome. Yep. Well, we are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we got three Marvel comic books to discuss. And they're all Christmas themed in one way or another. So we will take a moment and we will be right back.
Oh, my stars and garters. You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast.
All right, welcome back to the Casual Comics Cast Marvel Christmas Edition. It's Marvel Cheer.
Christmas Iceman, Trio.
Iceman would love it here. It's negative 10 today.
He would.
Holy cow, it's those great Omaha, Nebraska winters. So we got three comics to cover. We got Amazing Spider-Man 166, Marvel Team Up number 1, and Sensational She-Hulk number 8. Marvel, having researched this for the show, has like so many Christmas and holiday themed compared to DC. When Jeff and I looked, it was slim pickings. Marvel, you had a wealth of opportunities. I don't know why. I don't know what the difference is between the two publishers, other than like these are your street level heroes. They got their day-to-day lives and you're already invested in what's happening in Peter's life, what's happening in Johnny Storm's life. So no one's really invested in like what's going on in Aquaman's home life.
Yeah, they do weave. Marvel does weave it into more real life. I mean, that's kind of their thing. So I guess maybe Christmas, that's why you don't see a lot in DC. I mean, it's made up, you know, worlds that kind of mesh with real worlds. But Marvel's all about, you know, when who's the real president? Like, that's when they talk about Obama, right? So when he was president, talk about Nixon when he was president. Like, they talk about 9/11. That happened.
Yeah, it's why I'm pretty sure a couple of the Avengers went on the David Letterman show. They appeared on Saturday Night Live as well in the comics.
In the comics, right. Not in real life. Yeah, exactly. Yes.
So yeah. Amazing Spider-Man 166, these dates cannot possibly be right. According to Marvel fandom, this was published March of 1977. I can't imagine they put out a Christmas comic in March of 77, but written by Len Wein, pencils by Ross Andrew. And when I first picked this up, one of the first things I saw, I was like, this is actually really beautifully illustrated. This is like a Spider-Man that pops off the page with action. And I was like, which one of these famous Spider-Man artists did this? And I'm like, I don't know much about Ross Andrew, but I feel like he does an awesome job with drawing a dynamic Spider-Man panel.
Yeah, it was very colorful. The color popped off the iPad.
Right.
But it was really good. Yes, yes.
So Spider-Man 166, War of the Reptile Man, or the Reptile Men. Spidey finds himself pitted against two reptilian men, Stegron, the dinosaur man, and the lizard. After Stegron gets a hold of his revitalization ray, skeletal dinosaurs are restored to flesh and blood. Spider-Man versus dinosaurs on the streets of New York City. I love it.
I'm just fascinated that there's a revitalization ray. Yeah.
Right. Who's Stegron? Did you know Stegron?
No. I did not know Dr. Vincent Stegron. I thought that was just, yes, that's why I just learned that when I was rereading it. I'm like, I thought the bad guy's name was Stegron. But that was just like his, like the lizard.
What a fortuitous,
that's his last name.
What a fortuitous name to get dinosaur based powers.
But I'm like, wait a minute, you're a villain and your villain name is Stegron, but when you're a human, that's your last name. That doesn't seem like a really good alibi. To be like, wait a minute, aren't you Dr. Vincent Stegron? No relation.
I'm not Stegron. That's not what your driver's license says. At least come up. You can make up a different name. There's a ton of dinosaur bad guy names you can just make up. Just use your real last name.
So for all this time, since
I feel like the Green Goblin being like, I'm Green Osborn.
But I thought, right, I thought Stegron was a type of dinosaur.
Stegosaurus.
But to Stegron, like that's his last name.
Must be. Maybe he's descended from Stegosaurus. Maybe Ego's his father. I don't know.
So yeah, so War of the Reptile Men. So yeah, but it has a Christmas theme. He's supposed to go to Christmas. My one of my favorite parts in the book was the bachelor pad of Harry Osborn and Flash Thompson.
That was pretty
sneak peek in there.
That was pretty awesome. The book. It makes me feel like really Stegron, though, hasn't been around that long, right? Because the book opens right away with, hey, Spider-Man had just been defeated by Stegron, and they're like, as seen in last issue.
short-lived villain.
They reference the fact that all this happened just in the last issue. And so the plot goes around that Stegron has confronted Kurt Connors, who is the lizard, and has... First off, there's a misunderstanding, and Spider-Man shows up there, and he's fighting the lizard, and they're duking it out. And the way the lizard is drawn is not quite as good as the way Spider-Man's drawn. He looks more like an alligator, the way this guy draws him.
Yep.
But after the fight, he gets away, and Spider-Man's visiting Martha, Kurt's wife, and she's like, hey, what happened is Stegron busted in here. He wants my husband to complete this formula for him. He kidnapped our kid.
Yep.
And it freaked Kurt out, and he's been working on it nonstop for 48 hours, and now he is turned into the lizard, and he's now going to go fight Stegron. So it's a classic Spidey, two villains fighting each other, and now Spidey's in the middle of it because Lizard is also his best friend, Kurt Connors.
Right. Kurt Connors, the classic one-armed hero.
Right.
Anti-hero.
I didn't realize Spider-Man just palled around with, like, Kurt Connors and his family to where his wife's not even really bothered. She's like, yeah, Spider-Man, good to see you. Guess what happened?
I know. Yeah, they're like, close.
Does she?
The Connors family. Yeah,
they don't know that he's Peter Parker, though.
They don't. They don't. He's like a friend of the family because he always saves Kurt from being the lizard. So it's like an ongoing thing with the wife and kid.
I guess so. Then you get a subplot with J. Jonah Jameson, who's just wandering the city. And they're like, either he's being a jerk or he can't hear me. And I think I know he's a jerk.
He's a jerk. That's true.
And he's building out a Spider-Man, the spider, what do they call it? The spider buster armor, or the spider.
Yeah.
He's trying to get this, which I feel like happened before. And now he's trying to get a new and improved version of robotic armor to go kill Spider-Man. And then that's when they'll do show up at Harry and Flash are roommates now.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
I did. They're bachelors, man. They're hanging out together. And they were always like distant friends, but I think these are like the college years.
Yeah.
Or just graduated college years. And so they're living together. So they're these side story characters.
And this is where they're all getting together, right? Because it's a Christmas party.
Yep.
All the best friends, all the Spidey friends who don't know he's Spider-Man. And they're waiting for Peter Parker to show up, and he's gonna call MJ.
Yep, and they don't know he's Spidey. So the running joke with his friends Harry, Flash, and Mary Jane are like, Pete's always late and he never shows up. You know, right. It's like, well, because he's out saving people against Stegron.
They did make some snarky comments about, like, on the phone when he's like, "Of course he's not going to be here."
Right. That's the running joke with Pete. He's unreliable as a friend.
I know.
And that's the struggle that Pete always has, right? It's like Peter the friend is unreliable, but he always takes Spider-Man and saving the city precedent at the expense of his own personal life.
which is what he's got to do now. Instead of going to this fun Christmas party where there's obviously somebody's getting engaged too. Is it Flash or is it Harry that Harry was getting engaged?
I believe it was Harry, but I don't remember. Yeah.
That doesn't last, yeah. Apparently. I guess not.
So he fights the gut baddies, right? So he goes after him and he, you know,
the revitalization ray.
And yeah, the revitalization ray brings to life all these other dinosaurs and they start getting ready to rampage the city. And that becomes quickly overwhelming for Spider-Man.
Right. Stegron has a bit of a bizarre plot in that he can bring the dinosaur bones to life with the revitalization ray. But then he needs Dr. Connors to come up with a formula so that he can clone more dinosaurs from the dinosaurs he revitalized. So he can create an army of mindless dinosaurs.
Right, right.
I don't know how if Stegron has mind control powers over dinosaurs and he can control them.
Yeah, I don't think he thought through his master plan really well. He's like, this is like Jurassic Park meets Jaws. Like, I don't even know what the...
Right. He really had no foresight. I wonder if he, like the lizard, loses his intelligence as he spends more time as a dinosaur. This version of lizard, though, seems like he's retained more of his intelligence than
a little bit.
I recall the lizard normally having.
Yeah. I think in the comics, they would, like writers would take liberties. It would go back and forth. Sometimes lizard was this mindless beast. Sometimes he had a little bit fogginess remembrance of Kurt Connors. This is more the latter on that. But you're right. The foresight, the lack of foresight comes through at the end when he's like, I shouldn't have done this during the winter. It's really cold.
Yeah, he's defeated because he goes outside like in the wintertime. And being cold-blooded like lizards are,
yes,
can't handle the cold. To the point where, like, he throws a rock to distract Spider-Man so he can try and jump him, but the act of throwing the rock itself drains him so much physically, he just falls in a lake.
Yes, he does. He literally is, and he's lamenting the fact. He's like, "Ugh, I should have done this in the spring. Damn it!" And he falls in.
My mom kept telling me to wear layers, and I wouldn't listen. And he falls in the lake. And Spider-Man's like, what was that noise? I don't know. I guess. And Spider-Man's just basically, I guess.
He gives up searching left. For him. Yeah.
He's like, I guess he's gone. I'll go home now. Like, anticlimactic.
It's odd because I was like, there's no, it was weird to me because Spider-Man foes rarely die. And there's an apparent death. And so I always thought he died from my remembering of it. But I went and looked up his timeline, you know that he actually survived that.
Well, I assume
he somehow reversed to his human form and he becomes a homeless man in the park.
That doesn't make sense. The way it would make sense for him to survive would be like cold-blooded lizards do, where they slow down their heart rate and their breathing and can like get frozen and then unfrozen. Yes. That's weird.
So maybe that happened, but according to the storyline, he reverted to his human form and became a homeless resident of Central Park.
Boy. Maybe we'll see Stegron show up again someday. What was
weirder, he did? There's a whole story here. He's like, he got into a SHIELD observation post in Antarctica. He became part of the Savage Land. Like, there's a whole thing on Stegron. Like, I think they created this character and they're like, this has no place in Spider-Man lore. Like, let's put him a hole in the Savage Land kind of thing. So there's a whole thing. He has a whole storyline. Captain America is involved. Like, if you want to go down a Stegron rabbit hole,
let's do it.
You can.
Do a whole podcast on Stegron and Stegron related topics. What's weirder though? Is it the way that Stegron defeats himself basically, or the way that Spider-Man defeats the lizard?
Yeah.
Because Spider-Man's he's like webbing him, and you're like, why is Spider-Man shooting webs in his mouth? And then Spider-Man's like, I replaced my web fluid with reverse lizard formula that turns you back into a regular person. Shot it into his mouth.
He did. I was like, what is going on here? Oh my gosh.
That was
weird.
And then, and then it's just Christmas Day, which is nice. And you know, you get to see the Connors family. Yep. They're together and Spider-Man leaves a little present hanging outside their window.
He was going to bother him. Because he's, you know, Spider-Man's friends with the Connors, but he saw the Kurt, the wife and the kid. And he's like, I'm not going to spoil that moment. Like, this is what Christmas is all about. So it was a real heartwarming finish there. So he left the present And then he went off and said, you know, Merry Christmas to all, kind of thing.
This was nice.
I liked it. It was.
Tied up.
It
was very Christmas. So let's take a quick
break. It was very Christmassy.
Yes. We'll come back. We'll talk about Marvel Team Up number one, which is a different Spider-Man adventure, but I'm very interested to talk about this one as well. So we'll jingle all the way back in one moment.
You're listening to your friendly neighborhood casual comics cast.
All right. Should we sing back in? No. No singing allowed.
No singing. No. Well, you can sing, but I can't.
Well, I will. How about this? The comic we're talking about now is Marvel Team Up number one. Have yourself a Sandman Little Christmas. The title, Have Yourself a Sandman Little Christmas, published in 1972, with written by Roy Thomas and pencils in this one by Ross Andrew as well. That guy's so prolific. Spider-Man and the Human Torch team up in this Christmas special to fight the perils of Sandman. Opens with Spider-Man, like we just talked about, the daily life of Spider-Man. He's at a polar bear plunge doing a human interest story for the Daily Bugle.
And it's in December. He's like, what are these weirdos doing jumping into the ocean in the polar bear challenge? He's like, well, they probably know something I don't.
And then bang, right into it. Sandman's on the beach, but this Sandman did not look like the Sandman I am accustomed to seeing.
I was a little jarred by this joke because I was like, what is going on? Like, this doesn't look like any Sandman. Did he get a rebrand or something? Because this was weird.
I've not looked it up. Was there a Sandman that was somebody besides Flint Marko? Or is this, they just changed Flint Marko over time? This has got to be him.
I think they had, was it even Flint Marko?
I don't know.
I don't even know what his backstory was. I thought it was weird because what they alluded to in the comic, that this was a Fantastic Four hero.
Villain. Yep.
Villain, I'm sorry. And I thought it was always a Spider-Man villain.
That's what we might need to go down the rabbit hole on if there were more than one Sandman, because you're right. That is a huge plot point, because Spider-Man fights him for a minute and he gets away. And then Spider-Man's immediately like, I got other things to do for Christmas. I'm going to foist this off on the Fantastic Four. This is their problem.
Yep.
Sandman shows up, not a Spider-Man villain. You guys figure it out. I'm out.
That's right. And you're right. It is Flint Marko in this. So they must have done some kind of a rebrand on it. But
I didn't
know. Yeah. So that was what they did.
I didn't know superheroes passed the baton in that way to each other. Like, that was, I was just fighting Sandman and he's gone now. I guess I'll go tell the Fantastic Four and then head on.
Have them handle it. That's right. Have them take care of it. That must be like a Christmas thing. But maybe everybody, you invoke the Christmas powers.
Yeah, everybody from the Fantastic Four is already on Christmas vacation, except for Johnny.
That's right.
He's in a Peter Quill frame of mind. He's lost someone, apparently, and he's a little sour. And everybody's like, if that's how you're going to be, you stay here. We're all going to have fun for Christmas. And he's just brooding away.
That's right. By the way, real quick, Joe, I wanted to say this because this was on the very beginning because I wrote it down. I made a note. I loved my favorite one-liner line in there is when the woman on the beach screams, it's the Sandman, and he says, that's my name, sister, don't wear it out.
There's a lot of slang in these where they're
there was a lot of hip, like, this is definitely a 1970s one. I mean, there was quip after line, and you're just like, what are you doing? It's just a little weird. Man,
but it's all weird in a nice,
yes,
funny way. Not weird in a, like when Jeff and I were reading Wonder Woman comics from the 1940s, and they're talking about Nazis being no good nicks. Like, no, they're worse than that. Plus, you're bringing me down here with all the Nazi Germany stuff. Let's get into the Marvel frame of mind, a little more lighthearted.
That's right. Yeah. So, so then Johnny comes in and they do a team up. They take the hovercraft or Quinjet out to go.
I love it too. Spider-Man's like, what is this? He's like, oh, they got the good, they took the good one. Now we're stuck with the old beater. Mom and dad took the nice Fantastic car.
This is just the clunker one. And so then they come up with a plan to ambush the Sandman and leave it to the Human Torch to screw up the ambush.
Right.
Which I thought was great.
Flying around for a while, just like looking for him, like, we can't find him. Stop some random.
Well, Spider-Man does some detective work, and he's like, "This is where he's going to be."
That's right.
Remember that? Yeah.
Like, he's come over this bridge three times. Maybe he's come over this bridge three times because he lives on the other side of it.
That's right. Yeah, and Johnny's like, "That's that. that's so weird. And then he finds out, he's like, that's actually pretty smart, Spidey. He's like, yeah, I know, dumbass.
I found this because I did do some research for the podcast. I did not realize they break up that random mugging. I didn't realize that random mugging, that's Misty Knight from Heroes for Hire. Because they don't reference it in there, but apparently it becomes a big deal maybe at some other point. I don't know.
Oh.
A lot
of threads to pull on these comics.
I know. Spider-Man shows, you're right. Torch screws up the ambush all the way by just randomly throwing flame balls.
He wasn't supposed to do any. He was supposed to just wave and say, I'm over here, to distract him. And he threw him, and he threw off Spider-Man's launch angle or something at the Sandman. And the Sandman's like, I see what you're doing.
Right.
And thwarts him again.
With some weird powers. Turns into
brick.
Yeah, I didn't know he had these weird powers. He's like, the wizard gave me this belt that lets me turn myself into brick.
Yeah.
Wizard. I don't know, wizard.
I'm like, what are you talking about? It was really odd. The whole Sandman thing threw me off.
The cool one is they bum rush him and he's like, haha, it was a thin two-dimensional version of myself, and now you just run into a wall.
I know. His Sandman in this one was just odd to me.
He was a weird Sandman because he takes to his family, and you think, based on Spider-Man 3, he's going to see his daughter. And no, he's like, I will turn myself in, but I want to see my mom first.
Yeah, another Christmas heartwarming finish.
And he's like, all right,
I'll let you go do it. Yep.
Spider-Man with his good heart is like, I had this. You can't go and talk to your mom without a present. Here's the present I was going to give to Gwen Stacy. You can give this to your mom.
Yes. I thought that was nice. He's like, we can still, if we were trying to kill each other, literally, but you seem like a good dude. So here, give this present away. And then again, another heartwarming finish. So very uplifting, very, very Christmassy.
Until Sandman reneges on his deal, because he's like, let me do this and I'll turn myself in. And then he doesn't, obviously. Right. But then Torch and Spider-Man have some time to think, and Torch is like, maybe I am being a jerk about Crystal breaking up with me. Maybe things aren't so bad.
Right.
And they both have a great Christmas together. I love it.
They do. They do. Good ending on that one.
So which one did you like better between those two comics? They both feature Spider-Man. If you're going to read one again next Christmas, which one are you going to read?
It would definitely be the 166. I mean, Stegron's a little weird, but Sandman's weirder. I just couldn't get over the Sandman in my head. And all the 70s quippy stuff was just a little too goofy for me. And I always like the Kurt Connors Spider-Man relationship there. So I'd pick that one. What about you?
I did too. I think it's nice to see that heartwarming Connors family kind of thing. I would like to know more about Stegron. Marvel team up number one is good, but it is just it makes me feel like I can look at Stegron and be like, okay, I get it. That's just a villain that's really marginal and I know nothing about. Sandman, it's like everything I know about this major Marvel villain is different in this comic for some reason, and I don't know why.
Right. And then you add in the 70s dialogue, and it's just jarring. It's a little disorienting at times.
And then again, Sandman, they're so eager to get him because he's such a destructive force. And at the end, they're kind of like, yeah, he got away. Ah, good for him. We'll see him next time. Although I guess that happened at the end of Spider-Man 166, where he's just kind of like, huh, wonder where Stegron went.
Must have gone away. Yeah, they're both pretty good. Yeah, both heartwarming finishes. But yeah, I would pick Spider-Man 166 to read again. And then go down the Stegron rabbit hole. That'd be kind of fun.
Let's do that. Let's shift gears, though, and move into the 80s. In 1989, Sensational She-Hulk number 8, The World's Greatest Detective, written by and art by John Byrne. Classic John Byrne started the run on Sensational She-Hulk. He changed the character forever. And in this, Jennifer Walters is put on a mission to investigate a murder. And the man who seems to have a lead on the case looks a lot like Santa Claus.
Good old Saint Nick.
Christopher Saint Nicholas? Is that his name in here? No, Nick Saint Christopher. Nick Saint Christopher.
That's right. What? I thought The World's Greatest Detective. Was that a dig at Batman?
It is a dig at Batman. And John Byrne was very, like I say, when we talked about She-Hulk, he's very much of he worked at both companies and he's going to break the fourth wall a lot. She addresses there's one moment where she's like, hey, I wonder if this will work like it did. They showed me before where she walks across panels and is suddenly in a different place at a different time. And it's like, oh, I wish they'd let me do this in West Coast Avengers too.
Right. Exactly. I do think those are funny. Those are really good. But yeah, I thought that was a not so subtle dig at by having Santa Claus be called the world's greatest detective.
Right.
And a dig at Batman in the DC comic world.
You get another moment that's very self-referential where she's like, you know, in order for us to get to where we're going, we need to take a detour through the subplot and then we'll wind up. It'll be a few panels. And it's Mr. L, the bald-headed villain who has plans for She-Hulk. And it's like, dude, that's Lex Luthor. You know it is.
That's right. I didn't even, as you said that, that makes total sense to me.
It's the world's greatest detective. And there's Mr. L, the bald-headed villain who's in an ivory tower and a rich businessman who has plans for She-Hulk in the future.
Oh my gosh, that's so true, Joe. That's funny that you bring that up. Yeah.
But in this one, in the plot is she's, you know, she's not working as a defense attorney. She's working in the DA's office and they've got a serial killer, somebody who's killed like 7 people, but they can't pin it on him because all they have is circumstantial evidence.
Yes.
You got to get some hard evidence. Somebody shows up who's like, I can help you get that evidence, She-Hulk.
That's right. And just to pause just for a second, you realize right out of the gate, like after reading the other two, and I know they're all comics, but you know you're in a She-Hulk comic when she's hurling through space in a modified 57 Chevy. And I'm like, what just happened? And then it takes her right to her house. And you're like, this is a She-Hulk comic.
It was a direct follow from the last comic where she got abducted and was in outer space. And they did modify.
In outer space, right.
I mean, the last issue ends with them putting her in that thing saying it'll take you home. So,
and it did. Took her right home.
Right home. She's like, I got no brakes.
Yeah. So that's that just for a sidebar, Joe, I'm like, okay, I'm in a She-Hulk comic now. She's driving around space in a 57 Chevy.
Right. Right.
So, yeah. So Nick St. Christopher shows up and says, I can help you.
He shows up in a, like, he's like, meet me.
Well, they meet at a restaurant, right? Yeah.
Yeah. He calls what was going on in the panel where she meets him for the first time? Looks like he sneaks up behind her and she's super surprised.
Yes. I'm like, did he just goose her? Give her a Christmas goose? I think he did.
A Christmas goose?
She got a Christmas goose from good old St. Nick.
It was weird. They don't show anything, but she has a very shocked look and her body is contorted and he's standing right behind her and he's only like 4'9" and she's 7 foot tall.
So it's a Christmas bite.
Might be.
He bit her butt.
You know,
he did something. He did something because she wouldn't do that normally.
But it's like, it's obvious from the very beginning that this dude is Santa Claus. They have breakfast together and they're like, huh, where that dude was sitting, there's now a pile of snow. His name is Christopher St. Nick. But he's going to help her get the evidence by going down the chimney into an apartment, which there's no way she can fit down. Anyway.
And she says, that's illegal search and seizure. So this is inadmissible in court. He's like, trust me, I can do this. So
he's like, I get a special dispensation at this time of year.
That's right. That's right. So we get, and then she actually does fit in the chimney. And she's like, how did I do that? And he's like, hey, I know what I'm doing.
A wink and a nod.
That's right. Good old bowl full of jelly.
But she gets it all put back in order. She calls, gets the appropriate warrants, John Doe warrants, I guess.
He teleports to Australia.
Where they get the evidence,
As if you don't realize it's him yet, they just keep leaning into hints of this is how he can travel in one night to deliver presents, like all that kind of stuff. He's got teleportation skills, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure. I mean, as a world's greatest detective, he's the one person who knows who's naughty and who's nice because he's watching you all the time.
That's right.
He sees you when you're sleeping. He knows when you're awake.
He knows if you've been bad or good.
Right. So he is Santa Claus is like one of the original superheroes.
Yeah. And a good detective. So they solve the case at the end and then the guy gets convicted. Right. So
they do. And it ends in a little different note.
That's right.
Which is Santa being like, maybe we can team up. And she's like, listen, I know you're Santa, buddy. And I know you're married.
Yeah.
She shows up. Right. But Santa's all playing it off. Like he's like, oh, there's a lot of stories about me. Who's to say if I'm married, not married? You never know.
Right. Santa the swinger.
Then Mrs. Claus shows up. She's like, I can't let you out of the house. You're only allowed one day out per year. I got to keep an eye on you.
This is why. I know. So he's basically a horny old dude So, you know, his I guess whole, there's that.
The reason he came to help her is because he wanted to get on She-Hulk's good side and have more than a Marvel team up.
A Christmas goose. He did. That was ending was basically Santa Claus getting like storming off with his wife hot on his trail, right?
She calls She-Hulk a hussy. She accuses She-Hulk of like trying to seduce her husband.
Yes.
Then she's like, don't worry. And they're like, she's like, you'll get yours. And then the admin comes in and is like, there's a load of reindeer poop in your office.
That's right. That was a great ending. That was a fun one.
I know we read a whole bunch of She-Hulk comics, like when She-Hulk the TV series was coming out, but like this is kind of what I remember from She-Hulk being goofy and silly. And I hope you kind of got into the Christmas spirit in a different way with this book. What'd you think?
I did. It was, you know, it was She-Hulk, right? It was offbeat. It was breaking fourth wall. You know, I thought it was a little like, I think if I was 12, I would think it'd be really funny. Now I just think it's funny in a different way and a little weird. So which means to me, it's like, it's actually a pretty good book. So I didn't mind it. How about you?
Yeah, it is. It's that kind of thing where it's just enough that, like you said, if you're a certain age, you'd think it's really awesome. And then when you're older, you can appreciate it for how it's just cheesy. And it's like,
yes,
it's okay for it to be. It's not serious. It's not in any way like meant to be dark or brooding or. And then that's where
if you were younger, you wouldn't pick up on all the weird sexual references if you were 10 or 11. But you'd be like, that's Santa. Why doesn't she know it's Santa? You know, right. So I mean, it would be good for little kids to read.
Yeah. Well, I could see that. Anyway, I liked it. So I think I had a good time reading all these books. I hope you did too.
I did too. Good choice.
All right. Well, let's take a break. And then we have one discussion that I am ill prepared to have, but I can wing it as we go. So we're going to talk about the Marvel Naughty and Nice list, but with a twist. And you'll have to see what that twist is when we come back.
You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast. We love you 3,000.
All right. So welcome back, everybody. Santa Claus is coming to pinch your butt.
Or bite it. Jeez. Height differential.
Yeah. We're talking Christmas comics, Christmas specials, all things Christmas, and we have a fun, I hope, list. It was based off an intriguing question, which is the naughty and nice list, but in the Marvel Universe, which heroes do you think are secretly on Santa's naughty list, and which villains do you think are secretly on the nice list? And it sounds like you did a lot more diligence than I did, Mark, so you want to start off with where do you want to start, heroes or villains?
Let's do top three-ish heroes on the naughty list.
Three heroes. Ooh.
On the naughty list.
All right. Who's your first one?
All right. First one is Professor X.
Professor X.
I don't know why. I just am like, he's a teacher at a school, and I think that he sometimes makes those kids do his selfish bidding sometimes. If we got to go save the world, it's like, dude, they're just students. Let them do their thing. So that was a real offbeat take, but I have Professor X as one of them.
All right. I have.
Do you want me to go my other two, or you want me one each?
Let me get in here on this, because I have a lot of thoughts. And I thought at first I was going to say Submariner, but I don't think anti-heroes should count, right? And I got reasons for Submariner that are largely also to do with the reason I would put Mr. Fantastic on the naughty list.
He's on my list too.
Is he?
100%.
Is it largely due to his neglect of his family?
Yes, it is. He was number one. I had him ranked 3-1.
Okay.
Mr. Fantastic / Reed Richards, number one.
Really?
Same reason. Yes.
And neglect his family all the time. Always promising Ben Grimm. Oh, I'll get you, Ben. Don't worry about it. We'll be back.
I'm going to create a negative zone prison camp, and I'm going to do it because I'm protecting the universe.
Right.
It's like, and Susan's like, but you're imprisoning friends and family. Yeah, but I'm doing it to protect the universe.
Well, you know what the math says on this? I did the math. It seems to be the right thing to do. He has no heart.
He has no heart.
He's a Grinch.
He is a Grinch.
He's a Grinchy. All right. Give me another one on your list, Mark.
So that was the top one. And then for a different set of naughty, I put She-Hulk.
Ooh, come on.
Because she can be naughty, as we witnessed in our last one. So it's not naughty like a bad person. She just likes to be naughty. And you saw it play out in the TV series with Daredevil.
We didn't even talk about in the She-Hulk comic. We talked about her whole daydream about Hercules.
Yes, that's right.
That was a good, and that's where there is some clever dialogue there. She's daydreaming about Hercules, or maybe actually just dreaming about him as she's asleep. And Santa's like, again, she's like, ah, oh, I need to bring Hercules back. They got to do something. I gotta find that guy again. And then Santa like is making a move on her or whatever. She's like, you're a little old for me. And he's like, what? Hercules is a high school senior.
Right.
He's an immortal on Olympus.
It's like, now he's just turning into a weird voyeurism dude at this point.
That is weird from Santa.
So She-Hulk is mine for a different reason.
I think I got Wolverine.
Yeah, I can see it.
He's a little edgy. He's willing to do things and go places other people aren't. He's not a good influence. He's hanging around with those kids, always drinking beers, not setting a good example for Xavier's school.
That's true.
He's got to be marginal at best.
Yep.
Do you have any runners up, Mark? I know I hit your number one, took it right away.
Well, it's funny. No, Wolverine was on my list.
Wolverine. So
same thing. Yeah, he's too serious. Like, dude, you got to have fun at least once a year. Come on.
You got to. Punisher, you can't. I thought about Punisher. I'm like, that's just too obvious. He's just a bad guy. Any of the Thunderbolts, USA agent, they're all.
I had Steve Rogers, Captain America, because he's just a little goody two shoes. Like, let your hair down a little bit, but he was a runner up. But those,
what about Hawkeye? Hawkeye is a bit of a ladies' man, heartbreaker. he's a heartbreaker.
He could be, yeah, yeah, I could see that. But yeah, that's the list. So, should we go to the top three villains?
Yes,
on the nice list.
Yes, all right. So, how about this? So, I don't steal your thunder because you prepared. You run down your three and I'll give you commentary on it, then I'll fill in any others that I can think of at the end.
Got it. All right, so number three is Sandman, and not the weird one that we just read, like the actual updated one. And it's because he always is just trying to save, and it came about in the comic, like he really has a good heart. He's doing all this stuff. He just got in an accident to get his superpowers, and he really just wants to take care of his kid. So it's kind of the weird version of Mr. Freeze in the DC universe. So number three for me is Sandman.
Because I had thought about Sandman, but that comic we read just kind of ruined it for me. Because like now he's working with the wizard to get a weird belt that gives him additional powers. He's
not that Sandman. Not the weird Sandman. One. I know it is.
If he turned to that's like, right. Ah, it's just a crumb bomb. He seems to be like
crumb bomb. It's like a crumb bomb.
He does seem like the dude who just fell in with a bad crowd early.
Yes.
And if he hadn't had this accident that turned him into Sandman and didn't know and knew how to, if he knew a different way to live, he would live it. He's not like
that's right.
Bad. He's just drawn this way.
I think he was actually a thief anyway, though. So I think
he was, exactly but I think good. it's like now it's, I mean, I don't want to get serious. You see it in society though. At some point, somebody's gone to jail for a while and they get out and they don't know any other life. You get the feeling from him that he would quit the life and do something different if only he knew how to support his family without doing that kind of stuff.
You're right. Yep. So that's why he's got a good heart, and that's why I had him number three. Number two, I had the Lizard. You know, same reason. You know, I went very heavy on the Spidey guys because I knew them the most. But again, Kurt Connors, you know, trying to be a good father, you know, good husband, just got his intelligence got in the way. So just a very lesser version of Reed Richards,
right?
of like really brilliant, wanted to grow a new arm, and he had unintended consequence. So so number two is Lizard for me.
Okay.
And then number one
makes sense.
Yeah. And then number one, and this is actually pulling in from the MCU, is Loki.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know,
you think he was just born this way?
I think, yeah. I mean, he had a rough childhood. I mean, he was stolen away, right, at our birth, raised by Odin, had an overbearing, arrogant brother, lived in a shadow forever. But that was the only family he really had, even though he wanted to deny it. So it really played out, and I actually liked his story arc in the MCU, especially the TV series. So and he's trying to redeem himself in the latest TV series, right? So that part of it, Loki, not necessarily that comic book Loki, I'm kind of bringing in MCU for number one in this example.
Well, I mean, it's hard when you're born and your title is the God of Mischief to like,
right? Yeah,
right? Somebody's like, oh, he's the God of Mischief. Well, you got a reputation you got to live up to.
Yeah, he's got a label,
right? He's been labeled. I agree with you, because even in the comics, you see it at times, is like he's just always trying to cause trouble for Thor. And for Odin, because of all the reasons that you talked about. But when push comes to shove, he'll do the right thing for the greater good.
Yes. Yeah. And even in the comics, whenever they had storylines where he had grander schemes, it just didn't feel genuine to me, because I'm like, he's really not a Doctor Doom type. He just isn't. He's not a world domination type. And they played that in the Avengers. Obviously, he was the main villain because it just tied so well in. But in the comics, whenever they tried to pull that off, I'm like, eh. I'm like, it's just Loki. Like he'll we'll be okay. Right. He's a good guy. So that's why he was number one on my villains nice list. What about you? What are you thinking?
It's hard, because with Marvel, I think more than DC, you get nuanced characters. You get heroes with flaws and villains with redeeming qualities. And then some you can't classify. Like, where do you put Elektra? Do you put her as a hero with flaws or as a villain with redeeming qualities? I don't know where she lies, but Santa's got to have a real tough decision with that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'd put her in the heroes with flaws category, but you could make the argument the other way, and I would agree with you.
Right. I'm just kind of looking back at my comic book shelf back there. I thought about Spider-Man, because so many of his villains are people who have understandable circumstances. Lizard, even when you get down to Scorpion and Sandman. Shocker, some of them seem like they just are dudes who got out of their depth and would try and do the right thing, but they're on the wrong side of stuff.
Scorpion got kind of manipulated by J. Jonah Jameson a lot.
Right. He was the progenitor of the Scorpion outfit. Why is J. Jonah Jameson always messing with people? Right.
Exactly. Yep.
I couldn't get there with Venom. I just went down the list and I'm like, I don't know.
I had a runner up, Joe. I had Mole Man.
Mole Man? I like it.
I'm like, just leave him alone. Just let him stay in his subterranean depths, Fantastic Four. Why do you have to ruin it all the time?
Right. Some people, it's like some of those villains are just like, you got in their business and get out of their business and they'll be fine.
That's right.
Iron Man. He's kind of a jerk a lot of times.
Well, he'd be the top three heroes on the naughty list, I think.
Does he do? I mean,
he's not a villain.
I would assume that he's given to charity and things like that. You never know how that all balances out over time, though.
That's true.
Right. Yep. Human Torch.
Tony Stank. Human Torch. Well, we're talking about villains, though.
Oh, we're going to stick with villains now. Okay.
Well, I was saying
I missed the window on heroes. No.
Yeah, you can bring them up. Those are good ones.
We're not rewinding.
Iron Man
and
back. Yeah, Iron Man and
what about
Johnny
Magneto?
I mean, he. I could see that he just wants to. I mean, it's literally calls it the Brotherhood of Mutants. Right.
He just wants to make a better life for mutants.
Yep.
It must be tough to be Santa to like make that call. It's like, do the ends justify the means? Because Magneto is all about, I am trying to create a perfect utopia, but only for a subset of people.
Yep. I was going to ask you, I had a question for you on this, Joe, is because I wanted to ask, would you put your favorite characters, like Scarlet Witch? Or a hero? Is she a villain on the nice list or a hero on the naughty list, or is she a hero on the nice list?
She is 100% a hero, but on the naughty list in my mind. There's no doubt.
Why is that?
Because all of her motivations are the same. It's what we just talked about.
That's right.
She has had really hard circumstances. If you follow through the MCU, or even if you just follow through the comic books, she was a villain at the beginning. She changed her mind. She's done her best. And in the MCU, she's just a mom trying to do her best to be happy with her family and people keep getting in the way.
That's right. And she's doing bad things to get what she needs.
But at the end, she makes the right choice again. And in the end, she does something that Doctor Strange has never been able to prove to do in any dimension, which is resist the power of the Darkhold and turn it away from it. Every in Doctor Strange 2, every time Doctor Strange encounters the Darkhold, he's corrupted by it. And the Scarlet Witch is the only one who breaks free of its influence.
Yep. Yep. Now, what about Vision?
Vision is beyond morality because he's a robot. Can robots be? Do androids cry?
Do they get presents?
That's, I mean, you know what? We could do a whole on the Vision and Scarlet Witch and their like Christmas traditions, because man, their family dynamic has got to be weird with Magneto being her dad and Ultron and Hank Pym all claiming ownership there. Wonder Man is his brain. Like, if Wonder Man is the brain patterns which Vision is based off of, and Vision does something bad, is it Wonder Man's fault? And so therefore Vision stays on the nice list.
That would be, I just had a thought. Most interesting Christmas dinner, I think it'd be that family.
Yeah.
you got the Moo Cow mom, and you got Vision and Scarlet Witch. You got Wonder Man.
What's her name? Magneto. I forget the name of Pietro? The cow on Wondagore.
Pietro? I don't remember.
I want to say Mulva. If you're really interested, Mark, we can go down this rabbit hole over the holidays, because the Vision and Scarlet Witch limited series. It's
Bova. Bova.
Bova.
B-O-V-A. Bova. Yeah.
Mulva.
Mulva. You were close.
The Scarlet and Witch miniseries, which is one of my favorites, 12 issues, follows her through her pregnancy, and it's 12 issues. Each issue is a month, so you do get to see their Thanksgiving dinner and their Christmas, which I loved growing up. Magneto,
I was shocked you didn't have that either. Maybe that'll be next Christmas, Joe. We have to do that one.
Well, there's all kinds of weird family dynamics with Crystal. Well, because Pietro is married to Crystal from the Inhumans, so like the Inhumans are part of their family.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Most interesting Christmas dinner. It's like, who do you invite? Which one do you go to? How does this work? Who don't you invite?
The drama.
I mean, it goes into the X-Men. Like, it goes everywhere. So she was an Avenger, right? You have Avengers involved.
She was an Avenger. She was an X-Man.
You got all this stuff going on.
Even just the people they're related to by blood.
Yes,
or by marriage.
Even the, just the specific. So anyway, I thought that'd be a good Christmas gift to you, is to talk about Scarlet Witch and Vision one more time.
Well, I appreciate that. That is a wonderful gift to be able to share my thoughts on them one more time before the holidays. What about Grace? Did she give you any thoughts, or she just was interested?
She
did.
She gave me Loki from the MCU. That was her.
Okay.
So I thought that was really good. She's like, I go, what do you think off the top of your head? Top villain who's on the nice list. And she thought about it, and she's like, Loki.
Yeah.
I was like, really? She's like, yeah, from the TV series especially. I really like how his story has been evolving.
Ooh, I got one to cap us off this conversation.
Yeah, let's do it.
Moon Knight.
Yes. That's a good one.
Does Mark Spector go on the naughty list and Stephen Grant goes on the nice list?
Yeah, and Loxley goes on the naughty list. You got all these aspects of Moon Knight. That's an interesting dinner. You just have one person there, but six tables or six chairs.
There's a one empty chair. We save that for Khonshu.
That's right. Oh my gosh. What about Danny Rand? What about that guy?
Danny Rand.
Iron Fist. No, I like the Moon Knight one. That's a good one to end on, Joe.
All right. Well, thanks for doing a Halloween. Holy cow, I'm lost. Holiday podcast, Christmas time with me. Now we already got to have a ton of ideas for next year, but you're definitely on the nice list, Mark. I know. So is Jeff. So is everybody who helps out with this podcast.
So are you, Joe. You're on the nice list too. Thanks for having me, Joe.
Barely. I made it.
Barely.
This year.
Barely.
I actually did ask for the 12 days of Marvel socks for Christmas here. So hopefully, fingers crossed, if I am on the nice list, it'll show up under the tree on Christmas morning.
That's right.
All right, Mark. Well, have a Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. And we will chat with you again in the new year.
Yeah. Talk to you next year, Joe. Happy New Year.
All right. See everybody. To all of our listeners, have a wonderful holiday season, and we hope that we will talk to you again as well. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays, everyone.
And cheers, everyone. If you've got a comic book you'd like to hear us talk about, please let us know on Twitter, @CasualComicsGuy. At our blog, CasualComicsGuy.com. Or on our Facebook page, Casual Comics Cast. So until next time, stay safe and stay frosty, people.